This is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, March 8th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, "In Appeal, Sweeney Argues for His Day in Court." Springfield. Months after his case was dismissed in Macon County, former Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney continues to seek trial to argue why he shouldn't have been fired last year. Sweeney's attorney, John D. Robinson, asked a 3-judge Fourth District Appellate Court Tuesday in Springfield to reverse a previous ruling in the case and send it back to trial court. The panel includes Justices Thomas Harris, John Turner, and Robert Stegman. Macon County Circuit Judge A.G. Weber IV dismissed Sweeney's lawsuit in June. Sweeney, who was not present for the oral arguments, alleged he was wrongfully fired in February 2016 by city manager Tim Gleason. In dismissing the lawsuit, Weber wrote that the decision was based on Sweeney's lack of legal standing for the case, not on what kind of job Sweeney had done as police chief. Sweeney should get his day in court to prove whether or not he was retaliated against, Robinson said. This case should be allowed to go to trial. I believe he is entitled to that. Sweeney spent more than 20 years with the Decatur Police Department and was named chief by former city manager Ryan McCready, taking office in January 2015. Gleason fired Sweeney a little more than a year later, on February 4, 2016. The basis of the firing is being disputed in the lawsuit. Robinson said Sweeney should be protected under provisions of the Illinois Whistleblower Act, which is intended to protect employees who report wrongdoing against their employer. Stegman asked Robinson why Sweeney reported the alleged misconduct about Gleason's use of a police vehicle only to the city manager instead of going to the mayor, city council, or even the press. Stegman said Sweeney did not appear to blow the whistle either publicly or internally. The scope of the whistleblower protections and intent of rulings in similar cases would not be expected by this case, Robinson said. Robinson said Sweeney did what city code required, which was report to his supervisor, who was Gleason. Reporting to the Herald and Review, another government or law enforcement agency, would not have sufficed, Robinson said. Robinson said employees such as Sweeney absolutely need protection in order to disclose misconduct. Attorney Jerry Stocks, who is representing the city, along with Ed Flynn, said Sweeney did not report the alleged wrongdoing in a timely manner. Sweeney allowed a police officer to drive Gleason in a marked police car to the airport in St. Louis on May 7, 2015, Stocks said. Sweeney didn't say anything about it until Gleason fired him in February 2016, Stocks said. He sat on it for 7 or 8 months by the time he was terminated, Stocks said. Stocks said Sweeney has been trying to find a way to recapture his job. As a police chief, Stocks said Sweeney should have known exactly how he could report misconduct. Some burden needs to be placed on the whistleblower seeking protection. Otherwise, Stocks said the law could be applied to virtually limitless bases. Harris said a police chief complaining to a mayor about the conduct of a city manager would see more like a classic whistleblower scenario. In this case, Sweeney was disclosing information Gleason already knew about, Harris said. There were all kinds of opportunities for him to blow the whistle, Turner said. The mayor at the time of the May 2015 incident in question was Mike McElroy, who died about 2 months later. Sweeney's freedom of speech was another issue during the arguments. Sweeney was alleged to be insubordinate when, during a meeting of city department heads, he refused to support Gleason's plan to increase the city's gas tax. Stock said it would have been Sweeney's obligation, as part of his assigned duties, to advance the policies of the city manager. Sweeney could have objected as a private citizen during a city council meeting, Stock said. He didn't say anything, Stock said. Sweeney's freedom of speech would not have been protected during the meeting of department heads as part of its role to establish city policy, Stock said. Gleason attended the oral arguments along with current mayor Julie Moore Wolf and city attorney Wendy Morthland. Some questions were raised about how some material was included in Weber's ruling. Robinson said the trial court misconstrued aspects of the initial complaint and misinterpreted Illinois case law. The appellate court did not issue an immediate response in the case. It is expected to issue a written opinion on whether Weber's decision should be upheld or reversed. The opinion could be issued within the next 3 months. The next article is entitled, Suitors Pleads Guilty to Murder for Running Over Ex-Girlfriend. Decatur. Eddie Suitors, or Sutters, I'm not sure which way to pronounce it. It's spelled S-U-T-T-E-R-S. Of Decatur, will likely spend the rest of his life in prison after he pleaded guilty Tuesday morning to first-degree murder. The charges allege he intentionally ran over 53-year-old Janice Cole with his SUV in the summer of 2014 in a rural area west of Decatur. Suitors, 67, will receive a sentence of 20 to 60 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections, to be determined by Circuit Judge Thomas E. Griffith at his sentencing hearing scheduled for May 31st. The sentence will be served at 100%. As Suitors stood before the judge's bench, dressed in a black and gray striped jail jumpsuit and wearing orange plastic flip-flops, Assistant State's Attorney Reagan Radke presented the factual basis of the case. She said that on or about August 26, 2014, police responded to the report of a deceased woman found in the weeds at the intersection of Pitt Road and Sable Road. It was determined that the cause of her death was consistent with being run over by a vehicle. When he was interviewed by police, Suitors admitted that between 12:30 and 1:30 a.m., he punched Janice in the face, causing her to pass out, Radke said. He said later he ran her over. He advised that he aimed for her neck and back with the intention to kill her. He then dragged her into the weeds and left. At the time of this homicide, Suitors was out on bond in a domestic battery case in which Cole was the victim. Suitors was charged with hitting her in the face with a closed fist on March 1, 2014, causing her to lose hearing in her left ear. That case will be dismissed by the state as part of the murder conviction. Suitors was represented by Assistant Public Defender Karen Root. Suitors has 14 prior convictions dating back to a felony case in Cook County in 1965. He has served prison terms for armed violence, manufactured delivery of cocaine, and violation of bail bond. He has been held in the Macon County Court on $5 million bond since his most recent arrest. The next article is entitled, "The King is Back. Elvis Performer Returns After Life-Threatening Illness." Mattoon. Sonia Wattles handed her husband Scott his guitar soon after they'd returned home from 8 days in Carle Foundation Hospital in Champaign. Scott, the Mattoon-based Elvis impersonator, was helicoptered to the hospital on December 7th because of an aortic dissection. He survived the often deadly heart attack condition and returned home on December 15th. When Sonia gave Scott his instrument, she said she thought, "This is how he'll heal." But Scott wasn't ready. He doesn't remember much about the week he spent in the hospital, the 5 days he spent at home, or the next 11 days back in the hospital. By the time he got home for good, it was New Year's Eve. "I missed Christmas," Scott said. "When I got home, the decorations were already down." After Scott returned from the second hospital stay, Sonia wanted to give Scott his guitar. But this time, Scott asked for it. "After everything that happened, it felt like a step in the right direction," Sonia said. "He played it for a half hour and was exhausted. He had to take a nap. But I thought, okay, this is progression." The half hour started Scott's return to the stage. The aortic dissection forced the cancellation of the band's Christmas show on December 17th at the Effingham Performance Center. On May 13th, Scott Wattles and the Blue Suede Crew will present One Night with Elvis to make up that show. "That will be my big return," Scott said. Well, kind of. Scott donned his sequined suit for 3 nights, 2 songs each night, at Red Hot Winter in Champaign on February 23rd through the 25th, and the band's first full show will be at the Old King Cole Festival on February 11th in West Frankfort. But the Christmas show is a big deal to Scott and his fans. It often features close to 100 performers. "He always does a big Christmas show with all Christmas music and all kinds of different performers," said Cindy Turner, who runs the Scott Wattles and the Blue Suede Shoe Fan Club Facebook page and helps promote the club, the band. As soon as Scott was well enough, he vowed to make good on the Christmas show. Even as he rehabilitates, Scott booked a makeup show at the Effingham Performance Center on May 13th. He hated it that the show had to be canceled. "He was absolutely devastated," Turner said. "It had to be done, but he's been pushing himself to get back so he can make up that show. Not just a heart attack." In 2009, a Herald and Review story on Scott Waddles and the blue suede shoes, Scott said, "We are heavy on the Elvis, but I'm not as heavy Elvis. But I'm not a heavy Elvis." Scott is fit. He lifts weights, runs, and cross-trained since playing sports as a kid. He was not a candidate for a heart episode. When Scott felt bad back pain on Sunday, December 4th, he chalked it up to something out of whack from his former days as a power lifter. When he passed out from the pain, Sonia wanted to call 911, but Scott insisted he'd contact a chiropractor on Monday, then proceeded to go to Sam's Club that night, then to work the next day. He even worked out. On Wednesday, Scott went to the chiropractor, then went to his job at Mattoon High School. But while running an errand, he again felt extreme chest and back pain and called Sonia. "I knew something wasn't right," Scott said. Sonia drove Scott to the emergency room at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. "The pain kept getting worse and worse. I thought it was a heart attack," Sonia said. "The whole time I'm thinking, holy crap, they were giving him nitro and it wasn't taking the pain away." Scott was given a CT scan, and the next thing his family knew, Scott was being packed on a helicopter to be taken to Carl for open heart surgery. Zipper Club. According to a study by professors from the Department of Surgery at Yale University, aortic dissection has a mortality rate of about 1% per hour initially, with half of the patients expected to be dead by the third day, and almost 80% by the end of the second week. Scott was at least 4 days into his aortic dissection before it was discovered, giving him an 18% to 30% chance to survive. Scott was in surgery at Carl for 7.5 hours. An artificial valve was used to replace the broken aorta. "They break your sternum and bust you wide open. I'm in the Zipper Club now. I have a scar from my chin to my belly button," Scott said. "It was by the grace of God and a fantastic surgeon that I'm here." In the aftermath of that surgery, I think that should read, Sonia began to learn just how lucky she was to still have her husband. "I quickly learned a lot about aortic dissection," Sonia said. "But what I didn't realize at the time was the survival rate. I started researching it and we're so lucky. It's a miracle. When I step back and look at what almost happened, it's hard." Scott said his doctors still aren't sure what caused his condition, but a birth defect is a possibility. He had detached retinas in the early 1990s that caused him to become temporarily blind, and he thinks the two events may be related. "It's possible my connective tissue is weaker than most people's," Scott said, but they're not really sure. Never be the same. Recovery has been difficult, both physically and mentally. Scott had complications from surgery that put him back in the hospital 5 days after he got out. He was hospitalized from December 20th to 31st, while doctors tried to relieve the fluid that was building up around his lungs and heart. When Scott got home from the second stint in the hospital, the euphoria of surviving a life-threatening illness gave way to the resignation that he'd never be the same. Recovery is hard. It takes so long, and you're never going to get back where you were, Scott said. I've been blessed to have the support I've had, but I was never a person who took medications. Now I'm going to be taking them for the rest of my life. It's been music that's inspired Scott to not give up. He first learned to play a guitar in college and did karaoke occasionally, but it was at a church talent show when someone told him he sounded like Elvis that his new side career was launched. What started out as playing at Lakeland in a big wig and a rental costume built up to an Elvis impersonator competition in Springfield. Scott didn't finish in the top 10 at that competition, but the experience inspired him to put a mirror in his basement and practice. A year later, he won a contest at the Lincoln Theater, and in 2006, put together the Blue Suede Crew. Soon after forming the band, the Christmas show became one of Scott's specialties. Most rock and roll bands talk about doing a Christmas show and say, "We'll do a few Christmas songs," Scott said. "No, this is 2 hours of Christmas music, some of the songs you'd typically sing in church." When Scott had to miss the Christmas show, it bothered him. He was happy with the way the Effingham Performance Center handled the situation, but wanted to make it up to the venue and his fans. "I was thankful people were so understanding and no one was upset," Scott said. "I know they took a lot of calls on it." Scott has been working toward the May makeup date. He began singing and playing guitar every day. In addition to going to rehab, cardiac rehab, 3 times a week. "I'm trying to gradually get myself there," Scott said. "I had to let the old me die. I won't ever be as physical as I used to be, but I'm going to recover as much as I possibly can." He still has it. After he realized he was going to survive the aortic dissection, Scott soon had another fear. His voice was gone. Having tubes down his throat temporarily robbed Scott the ability to hit the high notes, and he couldn't sing for more than a short time. "The hardest thing was that I hardly had any lung capacity when I first got home. It was hard to talk, let alone sing a note," Scott said. "It was very frustrating. It's a slow process." Less than a month out of the hospital on January 27th, Scott's 50th birthday, there was a party for Scott and the Blue Suede Shoes played it. That should be Blue Suede Crew played it. Scott mostly sat and watched, but he eventually got up and sang a song. "I didn't have a lot of range, but I pulled it off," Scott said. A month later, at Red Hot Winter, an annual variety show benefit show in Champaign, Scott wore his Elvis costume for the first time and performed 2 songs, "Don't Be Cruel" and "Jailhouse Rock." The show lasted 3 nights, and there were 3 nights of rehearsing leading up to it. "I didn't want to do it, but I needed to get off the couch," Scott said. Sonia agreed, but was worried. It gave him a purpose and something to focus on besides just his heart. but I did wonder how it was going to go, Sonia said. I was worried he'd get exhausted. But when I saw him up on that stage, it brought tears. He still had it. He's still Scott Wattles. He's a changed person, but he still has that talent that he was blessed with. Scott, though, wasn't as enthused. My confidence is coming back, but I didn't perform as strongly as I wanted to. His main concern was his falsetto, but Sonia had assured him his voice will come back. I've done a lot of research on it, and it always takes a while to come back after a breathing tube, Sonia said. And it is coming back. He and his voice are gradually strengthening every day. Performing, playing guitar, and singing, it's been therapeutic for him. It's amazing what music can do. What people want. The show on May 13th won't be the Christmas show. It will be Scott Wattles and the Blue Suede Cruise Classic Elvis Tribute Show. We're known most for doing Elvis, so that's what I'm going to give the people, Scott said. There will be some variety, some Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Elton John, but the majority of it will be an Elvis tribute. The night will be a special one for Scott and his fans. His unofficial, official comeback show. It will be part of a 10-show schedule in 2017 that will finish up with a return to the Christmas show on December 16th. Turner has been following the band since the beginning and can't wait for the May 13th performance. Though she's worried about Scott's health, she's ready to see him rock. This has been a harrowing experience for him and his family, and it's quite an adjustment when you're not used to dealing with medical issues to have something this drastic happen all at once, Turner said. He's really pushing himself to get his strength and energy back to do that long of a show. I know how much he loves to perform and how much this means to him. And I also know, after what he's been through, how much it means for him to get the word out to the public to not delay when heart symptoms occur. He hopes this experience can help someone else. What is aortic dissection? In an aortic dissection, the inner layer of the aorta, the large blood vessel branching off the heart, tears. If the blood-filled channel ruptures through the outside aortic wall, aortic dissection is often fatal. Aortic dissection is uncommon, most frequently occurring in men in their 60s and 70s. Symptoms of aortic dissection may mimic those of other diseases, often leading to delays in diagnosis. Typical signs and symptoms include sudden severe chest or upper back pain, often described as tearing, ripping sensation that radiates to the neck or down the back, loss of consciousness, shortness of breath, sudden difficulty speaking, loss of vision, weakness or paralysis on one side of your body, similar to those of a stroke. Weak pulse in one arm compared with the other. Actor John Ritter died from a thoracic aortic dissection in 2003. Ritter was misdiagnosed and treated for a heart attack. Actor Alan Thicke died from an aortic dissection in 2016. And that's the end of part one of the Wednesday, March 17th, I'm sorry, March 8th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. I'll be back with part two after the break.